This hour, we're going to talk about drinking water, filters, where you can get your water if you want to avoid fluoride in your drinking water, and some other issues here with our two guests, Bill Osmundson and Paul Conant. They're both next on Coast to Coast AM. Paul Conant, tell us a little bit about the fluoride gamble here.
Well, the fluoride gamble, in 1950, when the U.S. Public Health Service endorsed fluoridation, they had no health studies. The one single thing that they knew was that if you put fluoride in the water, you would increase the percentage of kids with dental fluorosis. Now, they also knew that that was a systemic effect. You had to ingest the fluoride to get dental fluorosis. It doesn't work on the outside of the tooth, unlike the benefits. You have to swallow it. And so you were essentially poisoning the growing tooth cells of the teeth. They knew that.
Right.
The gamble was that you could do that to the growing tooth cells without damaging any other cells of any other tissue in the body, the endocrine system, the brain, the bones, and so on. That was the gamble. And they've never really done the research in this country to test that gamble. And what the National Research Council did in their report, which was published in 2006, was they looked at studies done in other countries in these high endemic areas in China and India. And so there is no question now that fluoride is damaging other tissues. And the only issue from a scientific level on safety is there an adequate margin of safety between the levels that you are seeing damage to the brain, to the endocrine system, to the bones, and so on in these other countries, and the doses that we are getting, drinking uncontrolled amounts of fluoridated water. And I would stake my professional reputation on the fact that there is not an adequate margin of safety to protect everyone. And essentially, if you read Chapter 2 of the National Research Council report, that's what they say too. They pull out subsets of the population who are currently exceeding acceptable doses of fluoride. And these include people that do a lot of manual labor, they're drinking a lot of water, maybe working outside, people with kidney dysfunction, people with diabetes, infants, bottle-fed babies, and so on. And it was that notion of bottle-fed babies which triggered the American Dental Association very late in the day to recommend to the parents not use fluoridated tap water to make up a baby formula. But again, that brings us back to the notion there are families in this country that cannot afford to go out and buy bottled water for that purpose. They're going to use tap water.
Exactly. And we cook with tap water, for crying out
yeah.
loud.
Yeah. And of course, the other thing, too, I mean, we went through this 12 years ago when my wife discovered that our water was fluoridated. We tried to stop it. It took us 7.5 years before we got our village to stop fluoridating. But in that interim period, we would go out and buy these 5-gallon jugs of bottled water from the big store, a cooling tower. We used that water for cooking and for drinking. But we were still bathing in this stuff and hot showers and so on. In a hot bath, your pores open, and it stands to reason that fluoride is going to get into your bloodstream through the bathing. The other thing, which
I'll give you an example of that.
Sorry?
When you're finished, let me give you an example.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, the last thing I was going to say is on this, what really upset my wife is she's a keen organic gardener. She hasn't put a speck of pesticide on her garden, on her vegetables, for 25 years. But she, every day, was watering her garden, her fruit and vegetables, with fluoridated tap water. And that was really upsetting for her, that she couldn't find a way out of it. We didn't have rainwater collection systems or anything like that. And then the other thing related to that is animals. We have very good documented evidence. There's a wonderful videotape out there called Poisoned Horses, which shows these quarter horses from Pagosa Springs in Colorado, lovely family, Kathy and Wayne Justice, who I've met personally and vouch for their credibility. Their horses were decimated by fluoridated water. And the trouble with animals, farm animals, most of them are getting water from lakes and streams and rivers and so on. But occasionally you get a situation where the public water supply is fed to the animals. and they drink a huge amount of water. I think a cow, a grazing cow, what was it, 55 gallons of water? They drink a huge amount of water. And this is very serious indeed. And not many farmers know about this situation, but at least that is, its situation with the horses is very well documented. And a lot of the health effects that those horses are experiencing are also experienced by human, by being experienced by human beings.
They're guinea pigs. They're tests for us.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. The animals are usually the canaries. They warn us that something is going wrong.
All right, Bill, go ahead.
Well, I have a friend who, Audrey, and she has an autistic son who's about 23 years of age. He's about 220 pounds, roughly 6 foot, big guy. He's been autistic all his life, well, after he got some vaccinations. And he has had terrible problems with chemical sensitivities. She's worked with him through special education, schools, all the rest of this for years now, and struggled with even the magic markers on the, that are used on the what we call blackboards, on the writing boards now, whiteboards, and any construction of the schools, any chemicals around, she had to get rid of these things. And even then, at night, he couldn't sleep, and he would pace up and down the floor screaming and yelling in pain. And big guy, and very sometimes threatening physically because he was in so much pain. And she's a small lady, and this was a real concern. And of course, both mom and dad and the sister were spending a tremendous amount of time trying to help this their brother, their son, and he was having real problems. Well, she found out from one friend about 2 years ago that maybe he was reacting to the fluoridated water. So she had gotten rid of all these other chemicals, and she said, okay, I'll give him some water, reverse osmosis, special water that she went and got and bought it. And he started to do better, quite a bit better. And that's when she started joining me and saying, we've got to get this fluoridation out of the water system because my son does so much better without fluoridated water. But he's not perfect. He's better, but he's still having some problems. About 3 months ago, a friend joined us. Her name was Linda, and she said to Audrey, you know, you need to see what happens when you get rid of his fluoridated baths that he's taking. She said, I find a real problem taking a bath in fluoridated water or taking a shower. And Audrey said, you know, I've done everything, but I hadn't thought about that. So she went home, and she had changed from giving her son a bath in the evenings, because at night he would have a tremendous problems, to giving it a bath in the morning. He'd sleep better at night, but then during the day he had a little job that he was working at, and he couldn't go to work when she changed his bath in the morning. So then she took her bottled water that she was hauling to the house, and she put it on the stove, and she heated it up, and she started giving him baths, heating the water on the stove. Well, his he started to sleep, he started to be able to go out to work. Some people are so sensitive that the water that they're getting in their showers and in their baths does cause a problem. It's to those sensitive people. You know, I grew up in Africa, and over in Africa, we told the Africans to boil their water to make it safe. But
right.
You can't boil your water in the United States of America and make it safe from fluoride because the fluoride doesn't boil off.
Jeez.
You know, this is one of the disturbing things here is there's about 1% or maybe more of the population is sensitive to fluoride. They get reversible symptoms, and the symptoms are neurological, headaches and things like that, gastrointestinal,
Is it instant, Paul? Does it happen right away when they ingest this?
Yes, but the point is that most people don't think there's a cause for this. You know, these common complaints, headaches and stomach ache and rashes and things like that. And it's usually years they go to the doctors or over-the-counter prescriptions and so on, and they try to cure this stuff, and it keeps going on. Another a giveaway is tiredness, which is not relieved by sleep. Is another symptom. There's a whole book just been published on this. This is 2008 by Bruce Spittle, Dr. Bruce Spittle. It's called Fluoride Poisoning. It goes through all these 20 or so symptoms of fluoride poisoning, which is reversible. And incidentally, it's quite expected that if you have a poisonous substance, there's going to be a response. It's called the normal distribution, or the bell-shaped curve. And at one end of that curve, you're going to have a small percentage of the population which is very resistant to that toxicity of that substance. And the other end of the bell-shaped curve is going to be people very sensitive to it. And those are the people, the 1%, 2%, 3%, who respond even to one part per million drinking water. In fact, they did an experiment, 14-year experiment, where they gave people 1 milligram of fluoride in a tablet form or a placebo. And they identified all these symptoms, which were the symptoms disappeared when they stopped taking the tablet, and they reappeared when they started taking the tablet again. So that is all documented. And we're getting the same symptoms now from people drinking fluoridated water. In addition to that, which I think complicates, muddies the water somewhat, is what Bill was talking about. I think there are people that have multiple chemical sensitivity, which is usually triggered by an event, like exposure to a nasty pesticide. And after this one-time exposure, they then become sensitized to a whole range of different chemicals. And one of those chemicals is fluoride.
Now, how do we also know that, for example, fibromyalgia isn't caused from this, because they don't know what causes that?
That's right. There's an overlap. There's an overlap with the symptoms of that disease and the symptoms I've talked about, chronic fatigue syndrome and so on. It's very upsetting, because doctors in the West are not trained to recognize this system. We don't have labs that on a routine basis test the blood levels or the urine levels, which is the simplest one, to see if someone who's reporting these symptoms is being overexposed to fluoride. The doctors are not trained to recognize this. In August, both Bill and I heard a brilliant presentation from Dr. Sushila from India. And she has spent over 30 years studying the effects of fluoride in the villages in India. And she has backed up these, if you like, anecdotal reports with very scientific studies. She's got electron micrographs of the gastrointestinal tract. You can see the tract. And you can see the difference with someone drinking no fluoride in their water, 1.2 parts per million in their water, and 3 parts per million in the water. You see the microvilli, which are the little hairy things on the lining, which absorbs all the nutrients, disappearing. You see the cells, the goblet cells, which are supposed to be producing mucus, are disappearing. You see these cells going from the hairy-like things, which you expect, to practically bald, just going from no parts per million to 3 parts per million. And once, when she was giving this presentation, actually an American scientist said, are you getting anemia in the endemic areas? And she said, why? He said, well, what you're looking at there, if you're getting rid of the microvilli, you're not going to be, those people are not going to be absorbing the nutrients. They're not going to be absorbing the iron, and that would lead to anemia. And so she said, wow, I'm going to look. And sure enough, she found there was a lot of anemia in these endemic fluoride areas. But better, the good news is that she treated it in a very simple fashion. She first of all tested to see if there was high levels of fluoride in the urine and blood. If it was yes, then she said, right, identify the source, remove the fluoride, put them on a good nutrient diet. And then she found that the hemoglobin levels in the pregnant women went up, and their birth weights went up, and the fluoride levels, of course, went down. And she's done that in hundreds of cases. So something as serious as anemia in pregnant women and low birth weight babies with lifelong ramifications can be cured in India simply by removing the source of fluoride and putting the people on a good diet for fruit and vegetables. And of course, the whole thing is tracked scientifically. But doctors in the West do not know this. You know, this is a time of economic crisis. If we were to stop fluoridation tomorrow, we would save millions of dollars in chemicals, equipment, testing, and, of course, promotion of fluoridation. Millions of dollars would be saved in cities, in towns, and in the federal government if we stopped fluoridation. But we would also see, George, I believe, millions of dollars saved of people not having to get those medicines for gastrointestinal problems, headaches, pain in the joints, and so on. And I'll give Bill a chance to talk because I'm talking too much. I want to come back and talk to you about the fact that patients in Europe in the 30s, 40s, and 50s were given fluoride tablets to lower thyroid function. And these were hyperthyroid patients. And I'll come back and talk about hyperthyroidism in this country and a possible relationship between that and fluoridation.
All right. And, Bill, are you seeing more dentists jumping on this bandwagon, the opposition of fluoride?
Yes, I am. It's slow process because we have been so ingrained that it's safe and effective, but they are slowly getting on and saying, we're opposed to fluoridation, we're opposed to too much fluoride, but they are very scared to speak out much. You know, a real key here that Paul brought up that I think is very important as a dentist, I need to speak on it, and that is who diagnoses what in medicine, dentistry? The California Board of Dentistry, when asked whether dentists, it is in the purview of dentistry to diagnose the medical safety of fluoridation, the California Board of Dentistry said no. Now, this is a no-brainer. Dentists do not diagnose IQ problems. You don't go to your dentist to diagnose thyroid problems. You don't go to your dentist to diagnose bone problems or all these other medical diseases and problems that are happening. You don't go to your dentist. Now, we've had a lot of anatomy training, but that's not who you go to for treatment and diagnosis. Yet when the word fluoridation comes up or fluoride comes up, all the healthcare seems to say, oh, get the dentist together and let them make this decision. So the CDC and other people who are talking about fluoride, and of course the CDC now says that they do not determine the safety of fluoridation anymore. But any groups of people evaluating fluoridation, they are generally groups of dentists. When you're talking about the addition of fluoride to water, or the safety of fluoride to water, they're usually groups of dentists that get together and determine this. And yet we aren't licensed to do it. So we can't diagnose the safety of medical safety of fluoridation, and that's one of the problems where we've had a real lack of oversight. The physicians, toxicologists, chemists, other people need to be looking at this thing and not just relying on dentists, because the dentists are saying it's safe and because it's relatively safe for the teeth.
I've always thought if you follow the money trail or figure out who benefits, you get answers. Who's benefiting from fluoride in the water?
Well, there's several groups of people that are obviously dentists think it's actually reducing the amount of decay. And so it's kind of a charitable thing for dentists. But as long as people think that fluoride is good, well, then we do fluoride treatments. The toothpaste companies, they sponsor research. And Procter & Gamble is a big one that loves to encourage the use of fluoride in topical use. And of course, then there's the chemical companies. But those are the main ones that I think are benefiting.
Well, let me throw in a few. First of all, fluoridation is the gravy train for dental research. Millions upon millions of dollars are being spent researching dental fluorosis, dental decay in the context of fluoride. The whole National Institute of Dental Research was built on the backs of the fluoridation program in 1948.
So there's money changing hands there. Paul, again, we get you at a break. We'll be back with you. We'll talk about this in just a second. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines with our special report on fluoride in our drinking water, and we'll be back with our two guests in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Paul Conant, who benefits?
Well, you know, the sugar industry, The sugar industry in 1949, 1 year before the U.S. Public Health Service endorsed fluoridation, said we need to find a way to reduce tooth decay without reducing sugar consumption. I think they've always been a silent player in this whole business. All the sugar interests, from cornflakes to candy to soft drinks, I think they see fluoride as their salvation. You've got the phosphate fertilizer industry. We've already mentioned that. But I think the real interest here is that these agencies that have gone overboard promoting this for so many years do not want to lose credibility, do not want to lose face. Bureaucracies do not like to admit mistakes. And if you're in the middle echelons of a bureaucracy, you don't challenge public policy without threatening your career. The same thing applies to the bureaucracies of these professional organization. Everybody doesn't want to lose their credibility. In addition to that, we've got liabilities. We the toothpaste manufacturers have huge liabilities. The ADA that's promoted this, not only fluoridated water, but fluoridated products in dentistry, they have huge liabilities. So these are some of the reasons why I think this thing continues. But our weapon, George, is information. Programs like yours are fantastic for this. We need people going to the website, informing themselves, reading up on both sides. You know, just don't hear one side. Go to the ADA's website and see their arguments. But I believe that any independent person who's got an open mind, who looks at both sides, will find this practice as preposterous as Bill and I do, and will realize that it needs to come to an end. And I want to give you some milestones, give you some hope. Well, first of all, Juneau, Alaska. I know you have a lot of listeners in Alaska.
Oh, of course, huge.
And in October of 2007, Juneau, Alaska, even those citizens were outspent $150,000 to $7,000, voted 2-1 to stop fluoridating Juneau. And that came about because they had a panel of local doctors and so on, looked at this issue for 2 years, came back, and the council, based upon that report, said, okay, we're err on the side of caution and stop this. Immediately, the dentist came in, the dental association came in and put lots of money to get a referendum. But that's what I said. They outspent the citizens, $150,000 to $7,000, but the citizens still won that 2-1. Now, Fairbanks, Alaska is also considering removing fluoridation. And communities all across the country are reconsidering this. If you go to our webpage, fluoridealert.org, on the right-hand side, you'll see a list of communities that have either rejected new proposals or have stopped fluoridating. A big victory some months ago in April of 2008 was Quebec City. Only about 3% now of Quebec is drinking fluoridated water. But the milestones, here are the milestones for the scientific arguments against fluoridation. Number one, 2006, the National Research Council report, 507 pages. This is now the textbook of toxicology on fluoride. 2007, we launched the professional statement calling for an end to fluoridation worldwide. By August of 2007, we had 600 people. We now have over 2,000 professionals, including three members of the National Research Council panel, a Nobel Prize winner, the EPA unions that Bill was talking about earlier on, and hundreds of doctors, hundreds of dentists. And we believe, in apropos what Bill was saying, it's very daunting for a dentist to step out and take on his peers by coming out against fluoridation. But we believe as those numbers rise and rise on that professional statement, it will become easier. 2008, we started videotaping many of these professionals. And the first one is your guest, Dr. Bill Osmondson. We got a videotape of him, 5 minutes on Google. I think you have it on your webpage.
Mm-hmm.
Over 92,000 people have watched this. This is fantastic. Just that five-minute videotape is really going a long distance. And this year, we're going to be launching another videotape, a 28-minute videotape, 15 professionals from Ireland, from England, and from the United States, doctors and dentists and scientists, going through all the issues in the fluoridation debate and giving their professional judgment on why fluoridation is a bad idea. That videotape should be ready in about couple of weeks, George. I'll send you a copy. I hope that you can mention it, because, you know, we don't want to trick people. We're not in the business of public relations spin and all that nonsense. It's the science which says fluoridation doesn't work. It's the science that says that it's dangerous, and the ethics, as you've rightly pointed out, says that this should never have happened. We should never, ever have allowed government to force medicine on people without their informed consent.
All right, let's before we take calls next hour with both of you, let's talk about what some people can do on their own. Let's talk about bottled water. Let's talk about filtration systems and see what we can do. Who wants to jump in on that?
Jump in on that for just a second here.
Right.
The best kind of water I think that we can get is something that we don't have to haul a long ways, and that is a natural spring. Sometimes deep wells are okay. We want to have it good and clean without pesticides and chemicals. We don't want to have parasites, of course. We don't want to have bacteria growing in it. We want to have a clean, good water. The problem with fluoride is that molecule is so small that the normal household filters, like the Brita filter, those types of things, don't take the fluoride out. So if you're using a Brita filter, you may get the chlorine out, which is nice. You may get some of the other smells. The charcoal filters will help a little bit, but you're not going to get the fluoride out. You put that in your tea kettle. You heat up the water. Make some tea, hot chocolate, whatever you're going to do, and then there's a little bit of hot water left in there. And so you add a little bit more and heat it up again and heat it up again, and the tea kettle boils more. That boiling tends to concentrate the fluoride, so it even gets more concentrated. So the best thing to do, in my opinion, is one of two things, is either purchase bottled water that does not have the fluoride in it, or the second thing is to get a reverse osmosis filter that you can get for your house, and that will at least give you drinking and cooking water that does not have the fluoride in it.
Where would you install that? Because I've looked at some units myself, Bill, and they look like they have little tanks with a restriction on how many gallons a day it can filter. I don't think you can put that on your main water inlet system, right?
No, you can't. You have to get something bigger if you're going to do the main water. That one, I usually put that one under the kitchen sink, and it has a little faucet on it, and the little tank slowly takes the clean water out of the water system. So it has to be hooked up to the drain. And so it takes the good water out of the regular water and puts it in the little tank, and then that tank is under pressure, and it'll give you your glass or your half-gallon of water, and then it takes a while before that thing will fill on up again. So it's very slow just for drinking and cooking with it works well. But if you're going to use something for bathing, then you're looking at some rather expensive equipment. The least expensive I've seen, and I don't know if it works well, is around $3,000. Paul, do you know of any other whole house filtration system?
No, the whole house filtration systems are extremely expensive. There's another one on a small scale which I've seen people use, and that's ion exchange, and that is it's much quicker than reverse osmosis. But all these systems, you have to remember to replace the filters in the designated time. But you know, makes me so angry. If you think of this for a moment, the differential impediments that we're imposing. Okay, if we remove fluoride from the water, those who want it then have the ordeal of going to the pharmacy or the supermarket and buying fluoridated toothpaste and brushing it on their teeth. Most people are doing this anyway. That's no impediment. And if it is difficult for people to get fluoridated toothpaste, we can subsidize that. That's where the money should go, not on poisoning people. That's one set of impediments. For the people that don't want fluoride, listen to what you have to do. I mean, it's extraordinary. You can protect your drinking water and your cooking water, but you're not protecting your gardening water, and you're not protecting yourself from baths and so on. Why should we put so many people, thousands if not millions of people, to that kind of expense and chores because of this stupid idea that we're going to force this stuff?
Absolutely.
It's preposterous.
Absolutely.
And I don't know. There's so many layers of preposterous to this. Let me give you one more.
Well, how about a class action lawsuit against all the companies that are dumping this in our drinking water in all the major cities in this country?
That could be done, but it's a little bit difficult to sue yourself. In other words, the people I talk to say, you mean I'm going to be suing the local water district, my city, the taxpayers, I'm going to be suing my friends, my neighbors?
Well, I know, Bill, in St. Louis, the water comes from a private company. It's called the St. Louis Water Company. I think they're making money on water.
Yeah, of course, and they're selling the fluoride. Actually, I think it's going to be a lot easier to just read them the law that says the poisoning the water gets them 5 years in jail, and then file a lawsuit on that. The class action is because you have experts on both sides of this issue, and that puts it really difficult for a jury to say, okay, specifically you were harmed. Dental fluorosis is one that, yes, they would say you're specifically harmed from it, but the others, they're contributing factors for the thyroid problem that Paul was brought up briefly. If your thyroid is damaged, you're going to feel tired. If your thyroid damage is got thyroid damage and you're feeling tired, you're going to start eating more. When you eat more, you're going to have more problems with obesity, and we see that. The fluoridated areas have more obesity. You're going to have with your obesity, you also have your diabetes. Yes, we find in fluoridated areas there's more diabetes. We find also that there's a higher blood lead level in fluoridated areas for children. In other words, they go and they draw blood in areas of children where there's no fluoride and where there is fluoridated water, and they find a higher blood lead level in children who are fluoridated. I mean, why are we putting fluoride in the water, which has contaminants of the arsenic and the lead and the mercury, and it goes on and on and on the list of this contaminated industrial waste product? We know that it's a very strong acid that dissolves the lead from our faucets, etc. We know our children are getting higher blood lead levels. It's been tested. There's no question on this thing. And yet we keep on putting poisons in the water which are causing damage to our children. What do we do with the mother who comes up to me and says, you know, I don't have a car. I've got this baby. I go to work and I'm hauling my baby to the grocery store and I'm hauling the diaper bag, and now you're telling me I need to haul my water home on the bus? Have you ever tried taking all those things on the bus? How can we be so cruel? And this nobody disagrees with that. I mean, those who are promoting fluoridation are saying mothers should not give formula to their infants made with fluoridated water.
What do you two think of shower filters?
They don't work for fluoride.
No, I guess they don't.
It'd be good for chlorine, but not for fluoride. Talking about hypothyroidism, you know, there are millions of people with hypothyroidism in this country. It's an epidemic. The second most used prescription drug in the United States is Synthroid, which is for treating hypothyroidism. Now, I'm going to read you a quote here from the National Research Council report talking about subclinical hypothyroidism. These millions more people are sort of on the borderline of getting a disease which doctors would recognize. I don't know how many millions of people in the United States have subclinical hypothyroidism, but this is what the symptoms are, according to the National Research Council. While subclinical hypothyroidism is associated with increased cholesterol concentrations, increased incidence of depression, diminished response to standard psychiatric treatment, cognitive dysfunction, and in pregnant women, decreased IQ of their offspring. And, of course, Bill has mentioned lethargy and fatigue and obesity. I mean, you look around you. Look at how many obese people we have in this country. And to make matters worse, nobody in the health service that is promoting this silly practice is even looking to see if these things are related to fluoridation, arthritis, hypothyroidism, lowered IQ, bone fractures in children. They're just not looking.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've known a lot of those things since about 1850 when they first started using fluoride to create goiters and thyroid problems in dogs and people, etc.
What's going on, Paul, on a national basis with, like, fluoride alert? What's happening?
Well, we are growing exponentially. I mean, I think we've gone from just a few hundred people a few years ago. We went up to about 2,000. I think we now got a membership of approaching 10,000.
I think we crashed your website tonight, by the way.
Yes. The website is, you know, since I've been campaigning, things have so dramatically changed in terms of the tools which we citizens can use: videotaping, video editing, Google, being able to put your videos on Google rather than to distribute them in hard copy, and of course the internet is just what the internet has done, and the internet ultimately would end fluoridation because they can't keep the data hidden. They can't hide the information anymore. They've got two strategies for promoting fluoridation. One is endorsements. This organization says it's the best thing since sliced bread. This organization, this organization, this organization. When you pursue those organizations, they can't give you rational answers to questions. They haven't kept up with the literature. Most of them haven't studied the literature. But it works with the people. And the second tactic that they use is to denigrate opponents and say that we're crazy and this is all the science that we're citing is junk science. Well, we got the National Research Council saying it ain't junk science, folks. Fluoride causes harm to the body. And with the internet, if people go to fluoridealert.org, on the left-hand side, you'll see a health database, and there's a huge amount of data there which goes through each tissue at a time, fluoride in the brain, fluoride in the thyroid, fluoride in the bone, and so on. And each section is thoroughly documented with all the references, even abstracts, even whole papers in some cases. So information, information, information. Information and organization. People out there, I would say put more of your time, energy, and money in stopping fluoridation in your community than putting effort into, you know, filtering your water and all that kind of stuff. If we get enough people doing that, we can end this thing once and for all.
And are some major cities, beyond the few you mentioned earlier, seriously considering this?
I wouldn't say major cities. I'm hopeful that we will get a major city. Quebec City was one, and some Canadian cities. Most of British Columbia is no longer fluoridated. We have some capitals which are not fluoridated. Albany is not fluoridated. They keep trying. They haven't been able to do it. The whole of Long Island is not fluoridated. But we're getting this. The dominoes are beginning to fall, but they're beginning to fall really with small towns. When you've got small towns, it's more rational process. It's often, you know, in small towns, often an issue becomes the issue of focus. And when it becomes a focus, and when the media does its job, I go back to Juneau, Alaska for a moment. You need a couple of things to beat fluoridation. You need citizens organizing. It only needs a handful of people, but you need to. It shouldn't be one individual. It will crucify one individual. They'll marginalize one individual. You've got to have a group of friends working together.
Absolutely.
Secondly, you need the media giving both sides, get even-handed, publish those letters, but from both sides, put an article pro and con from both sides. What we see, unfortunately, in too many places, a very superficial treatment. Imagine this is a typical article. Mrs. Bloggs from Canton, New York, says fluoridation is a bad idea. The Center of Disease Control says that fluoridation is one of the top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century. The local dental association, medical association, housemaid needs association says all the professionals say it's okay. Now, the journalist has done his job, right?
He's using a standard news release.
Right? Yeah, that's right. But he's given both sides. In theory, he's given both sides.
True.
But giving both sides like that, in that superficial fashion, the white coats are always going to win. It's the white coat syndrome. If it becomes an issue, like Plattsburgh, New York right now, Schenectady, New York, are considering stopping fluoridation. What will happen?
Well, that's the music, Paul. That means we got to go. We'll be right back.